And yeah, I'm gonna let's go live on Facebook. People are there, ready to roll. They're ready to watch us.
Great.
This is fantastic. And I've also got a really great comeback. I'm gonna do another video on I can't even say the word. I'll call it the shot. You know, I can't say the V word because if I put this on YouTube, it's going to be censored.
Yeah.
So we have to be creative in getting around things like that. And I am going live. So let's see if the feed starts to grab. If anybody is seeing this right now, we are preparing to go live. Peggy Hall from The Healthy American with John J. Singleton, privacyfight.com. And yeah, I think the feed is going to be coming up. So hello, friends. This is Peggy Hall from thehealthyamerican.org. Let me know where you are tuning in from, and let me know any issues you have had with Costco. Today, I am joined by my favorite guest. I think the guest that I get the most popular request for, and that is John J. Singleton. And he is a fellow patriot. He actually has been a pioneer in bringing the fight to the courts legally. And the most beautiful thing is you don't need a lawyer. John, welcome. I am so happy to see you again, my friend. We've worked on a few projects together. And before we dive in, because I want to get right underway, I need to say that out of the thousands of emails that I field, and I know you do the same, one of the most popular requests I get is this: can you recommend an attorney? And my answer to them is, why do you need an attorney? Because first of all, it's very difficult to find an attorney, in my experience, who wants to take on these civil rights issues. There are civil rights issues, and there are also criminal issues that we are going to address. And the basic difference, friends, is that civil issue, well, John, you can talk about that in a moment, but the attorneys I've spoken to shy away from the civil rights issues. Some of them are just not up to speed on what the laws are that we're dealing with. But the most important thing is, John is going to give you the tools to arm you to the actual step-by-step and the actual documents that you can file on your own. And that's what we're going to talk about today. Before we do that, John, I want to do a little bit of background about Costco. Mm-hmm. And I also would like to hear from people in the comments below. Why do you even shop at Costco? Why do you shop at Costco? Do you like the selection of food? Do you like the fact that you have to pay a membership every year for the privilege of shopping there? Do you like the return policy? I think the return policy is great. Do you like buying like the massive sizes? They don't even really do that anymore. You can buy like one mayonnaise and all. In the old days, it was really warehouse quantities. Do you like the selection? Is it nearby? Do you like the prices? Do you like the customer service? I'm curious as to why you want to shop at Costco. That's my first question. Now, I am all about justice. I am all about rights. I am all about your freedom and your liberty. And in my view, you should have the ability to shop at Costco or any other store without discrimination. So we're going to talk about the definition of public accommodations. I want to talk about the definition of a direct threat and why you aren't. And then we're going to talk about the difference between civil action and criminal action. And we're going to get right into the heart and the meat of the matter. Before all this nonsense started, actually, the nonsense has been going on for some time, I put on my website a letter, and I would like you to still try that, everybody. I'm going to share my screen here, and we will take a look, shall we, at the previous Costco letter from, let's see if I'm sharing here. From the previous, that's not what we need. We're doing some remodeling. Okay, let me get back to my website here. Here we go. So under Shop Costco Mask Free, there's a website. Here's my website. Here's the page. I have a video where I talked all about what you can do. And I have a letter from the CEO which states that the requirement to wear a mask does not apply to children under the age of 2 or to individuals who are unable to wear a face covering due to a medical condition. Now, you know that you do not need to disclose your medical condition. I would caution folks against using the phrase, you know, HIPAA violation. That's been thrown about sometimes incorrectly. HIPAA is what protects your medical records from your doctor being thrown out to people that don't, you know, that they don't have the rights to see it. That would be your doctor just giving your medical information to your employer. They don't have the right to do that, or giving your medical information to your neighbor, or giving your medical information to a building where you want to enter into a lease agreement. That's what HIPAA means. Okay, now there's something different called your privacy. You are covered just by being a private person, that you do not have to disclose anything about your medical condition to anyone. So friends, I just want to be clear, that word HIPAA is like a red flag to these store clerks, and they'll start to fight against you and say, well, the ADA said your badge isn't accurate. Leave that out. You're a human being with the right to enter the store and breathe. Period. We don't need HIPAA, we don't need exemptions, but to kind of make it a little easier to play in their playground, as I call it, I was offering this suggestion to bring the letter with you and just have the clerk read the letter. Personally, I've never had an issue at Costco. My husband's never had an issue at Costco. When I'm in there, I'll talk to people and say, you know, you don't really need to wear that thing on your face. And I've had people take it off. So this is in the old days, meaning the last few months. Now, you could, well, I don't know how snarky I want to get here, but let's just keep things on the up and up. So everyone has told me that Costco now has a new requirement that they are not going to allow for any exemptions, and you would have to wear a shield. I'm going to stop sharing. This is the website. This is where you will be able to find all of the information we're going to share with you. John and I are filming this live, and if you're watching this live, please don't go clicking on the website. It's not there yet. This will all be available for you in the replay. TheHealthyAmerican.org, shop mask free. John has done all the legwork for you. We are going to have everything embedded here where you can click, and then I'm going to turn this over to John, and he is going to tell us what his remedy is. I've had hundreds, if not thousands, of people, John, emailing me, all upset that they're not going to be able to shop at Costco. So I gave them four options. Number one, cut up your card, don't shop there. That's kind of the easiest one. Shop somewhere else. Number two, stock up this weekend. We're filming this on Friday, and the medical dictatorship starts on Monday. So if you want to avoid that medical dictatorship from Costco, who now thinks they're medical doctors, you should stock up. Go buy all the things you want, all the non-perishables. Load up your cart, go 2, 3, 4 times a day, go to different locations, whatever you want to do, stock up so you never have to shop at Costco again. That's my second remedy. My third remedy is to comply, which is not a very good remedy. I don't like that remedy. My fourth remedy is have somebody else go to Costco. My sister has a friend who doesn't mind wearing a mask. So her masked friend goes in concealing her identity, you know, like a bandit, and she'll go into these stores, not to rob them. That's what I would think if I owned a store. I would think these people are coming in to rob me, but she's going in not for nefarious reasons, but she's concealing her identity, and she'll go in and go shopping for my sister. That's an option. Then you don't even have to be surrounded by all these sinister, menacing appearances of people who we don't even know who they are, since their face is concealed. And then the fifth, and this is what we're going to talk about, you can fight back. And we're going to fight back, and we're going to show you exactly how. I did a long introduction. People say, Peggy, you talk too much. You're a guest. You should let your guest talk. Here you go, John.
Thank you, Peggy. That's just fine. All right. Well, keep your membership. This is my first recommendation.
Okay? Yay!
Because when someone breaks a contract, you don't want to give up and walk away. You have a cause of action. So use it. Make them perform under the contract. I'll show you how to do that. So there's a couple things to consider here. One is, yeah, you can sue them and you can obtain an injunction. That's entirely likely. I've got a few cases now that it looks like we're going to get that.
Tell us, John, define for everybody what an injunction is.
It's just an order from a court that requires someone to do or not doing or stop doing something. It's an order from a court. So what happens then is the store has a policy that for whatever reason it's violating the law, and then you go to the court and say, Judge, they're violating the law and it's affecting me in this way and it may affect the public, therefore I want an injunction restraining this organization from engaging in this conduct. Now, if they continue doing it, now they're under a court order and they could be in violation and contempt. Whereas if you don't do that, you could be charged with trespass, right? Which is, we all know that's bogus. But if you do this first, now you have the power because now you have a court order. They don't, right? That's the civil aspect of it. There's the criminal aspect. And if you guys like this idea, what we were talking about before about, you know, make him sign something, you know, or hand him a notice, right? Imagine writing a citation. Imagine writing it like a traffic ticket, a notice to appear. So the way you do it is, this is what I recommend. You've got the civil aspect, we'll get into that. But on the criminal side, when you have someone wearing a mask, and I believe you can see this in every state, when someone's wearing a mask and harassing you, when he's concealing his identity and threatening you or harassing or intimidating you or even assaulting you, whatever, you know, in something that creates a cause of action that you can make against that individual or his employer, like a civil cause of action, if you have a civil cause of action because of his conduct, that's also a crime. By the fact that you can sue for a civil violation, it also is a crime, and that individual is a suspect in the crime. Normally, wearing a mask and intimidating people or harassing them is a second degree misdemeanor. It's going to vary like that by state. Some states are really specific. I mean, California, I did these for California and Florida, so you guys can you start there. All right, so the way you do this is, now there are many-
John, let me, I'm so sorry, but I want to interrupt. I want to make everybody really understand the definition. So cause of action means you now have the right, you have a reason to be able to sue. For example, you know, I personally wouldn't be able to put a lawsuit against a doctor in Pennsylvania because I wasn't harmed by that doctor. Even though in my own mind, I know that what he's doing is wrong. I personally was not affected. So now this cause of action is your reason that you state in your lawsuit. So I just want to make sure that that's clear. And then you also mentioned the word assault. Because you know what, John, you are so intelligent. You get things real quickly. And a lot of people are like, whoa, wait a minute. So
slow me down. That's fine.
That's perfect. So I want to also define assault. Some people think assault means you've been hit. Assault can be somebody bullying you like this, you know, in your face. We have that expression when someone's in your face, where you feel that the threat of physical harm is imminent. They might have a clenched fist. They might get all big. Mm-hmm. You might feel you're backing up. That is the definition of assault. You do not have to show physical harm to make a claim of assault. Assault now is a crime. It's a criminal violation where the civil violation is somebody, you know, stepping over your civil rights. They didn't let you in. They called you they gave you a slur, a name, or something like that. But the criminal act, and is there any other definition I need for criminal?
No, you hit it. That's it.
Okay. Yeah. So don't worry. You don't need to say that you actually have any physical evidence, although I do have many people emailing me saying that they were pushed, they were moved, they were cut, they were hit, they were elbowed, they were manipulated. This now is battery. Okay. So assault is kind of the threat. It can also include battery where you were harmed. It could, and that's where the court decides. The judge is going to decide, was that accidental? Did you egg them on? Even if you egg them on, that's not a cause for you to be hit. So I just want to define that. And I think those were the two things right there. So let's go ahead and move on. Thanks, John. Let's dive in. Right.
And so this morning I went to Costco. I'm doing what you said. I'm just go there and get all the stuff I like, send some things to my friends. And I was assaulted. I walked in there and the guy at the door had the box of masks. My wife and I went in there together and he walked over to me and touched my shoulder. And I said, don't touch me. And that's assault right there. But I didn't want to, you know, I didn't want to do anything because there's other issues there. And if I'm going to say that this guy assaulted me, what am I? You know, I just, it's not worth it. But that technically was an assault. He touched me. So just got to use some judgment there. I'm not trying to, you know, wreck everybody's day. And we have a good time over there. So I like that place. So yeah, okay. You have to have a cause of action. That means you have to have the right to sue somebody. So we got the civil aspect, but here's the criminal aspect. The criminal law, with few exception, okay, there are criminal statutes like RICO. RICO is used against the mafia, organized crime. There is a private right of action in a RICO claim. I'm not talking about we should do this. The other private right of action, something you identified earlier a couple of months ago, Peggy, was in Title 18 of the Criminal Code, okay? Title 18 of the United States Code, there's a section number 1038, okay? And in there is a private right of action dealing with, I think it's public funds or something like that. You actually can sue where normally the police or the Department of Justice or the U.S. Attorney's Office or, you know, the Attorney General could only have the right to prosecute somebody. In that particular statute, you're allowed to sue somebody for a crime, okay? Now, when it comes to things like this with the mask wearing, you don't have a private right of action. It's only public, so good luck getting the AG's office to prosecute that against, let's say, a guard, a security officer, a store employee. They're not gonna do it. You have to do it. You have a claim to make, you would seek an injunction. Again, it's the injunction. The injunction is because someone committed a crime, you don't have the private right of action to prosecute the crime, but you do have a personal interest in the violation because it affected you. And you can state a cause of action, meaning you have the right to sue, but you also have to be able to allege certain facts. And I'm not gonna get into all those details, it's in my documents. You have to say certain things in the complaint, because if you don't, the judge will throw it out. This is what people say, they'll throw it out, meaning he's gonna dismiss it, okay? All right, so what you do is you start a case, and I'm just gonna give you an example. Let's say that I wrote it this way because my wife had this experience a few days ago. They had a police officer there. He was unarmed. He was a sheriff's deputy at the door. And he literally stood in front of my wife to block her, like, you know, with his body. Now that's a crime. And he was wearing a mask, you know, covering his whole face, and went off to give her whatever, but she doesn't stop. She's only 5'1". And she just said, you know, I'm going to go shopping. You do your thing. And she walked around him. So, but in that case, what you can do is you file a lawsuit against the sheriff's office. This is just one example. So now there's a lawsuit and the court issues a case number. This is a civil case for a temporary restraining order. This is an injunction. It's a special kind of injunction. It's a temporary restraining order. Okay, now that the case is pending, the remedy is you want somebody to be required to stop violating the law. So because this case is pending, you can literally hand the police officer at the door a citation to appear and show cause why he should not be enjoined from continuing to break the law.
Perfect. This is just brilliant.
It's very simple. I know I always say that I should stop saying that. It's a very simple process. But what I would do is, if you want to do this, I have all the documents. Procedure's not difficult. You get your case number. And you have a stack of these, it's like traffic citations, okay? It's a piece of paper, just like any 8.5 by 11. You put it on a clipboard and keep it in your car. When you're confronted with this situation, go back to your car, get the clipboard, and ask the person's name. If he doesn't want to tell you his name, that is okay. No big deal. I can explain why that works. You get the person's name and his title. Is he a security officer? Is he employed by the store? Is he a sheriff's deputy, a police, whatever? You write that in there. You decide a date. So make sure you pick a weekday. So you're going to have to know what that is. You can do this right on the spot. You pick a date, usually within 3 weeks. I would pick a date with it 2 weeks out. Okay. So if it's on a Wednesday, add 14 to the day number of the month and you're good. Okay. You can't mess that up. So you give them a weekday, pick a morning hour, 9 a.m. You're going to show up November 20th, whatever, to show cause why you should not be held in violation of the law and enjoined from continuing to break the law. So you hand it to him. So he's been served. Now, technically, you're not supposed to serve him if you're a party to the case, but that's okay. That's just a procedure and we can resolve that later. And you'll see how we can get that. It's not a problem, okay? Some of this stuff is technically not correct, but it'll be okay. All right, so you serve him. Now, the next thing you have to do is You want to rewrite the information, which is only a date and a time. It's just a date, really. You got the person's name or not, the location, you got all that stuff. You rewrite it when you go home. Let's say they don't let you in the business. Fine. So you rewrite this information and you file it with the court in the case that's already pending. And then you call up the court and you literally schedule the hearing that you wrote down on the judge's calendar. I'm going to pause for just a second here.
Yeah. So here's what I was thinking of doing, Sean. You know, we have that notice of discrimination. It's a slightly different approach. This is just more for a person to note down the incident and to have a sense of satisfaction that they didn't leave the store empty-handed. I have this idea of actually creating an actual booklet of tickets, just like a cop would have their parking tickets. And it's called non-carbon. And then there's a receipt. So you write it out, they get the yellow one, you keep the pink one. And now you have a record of everything and you carry around your citation booklet. Right. I'm going to make these available. There will be a fee because I have to print them and ship them and all. But for anybody who wants these, I am going to make that available at thehealthyamerican.org. You can walk around with your ticket book, just like a parking meter person. And that is going to give you confidence. It's going to give you a tool. Now we'll have to fine tune this part about, filing the case and having them appear. But the fact that you could also use this notice of violation is what I would call it, maybe. And you could serve that on anybody that is bothering you. It's an informational tool as well to let them know there should be something written on there that states these laws that they're violating so they can look at it maybe later or take it to their boss, or at least the people around you see what you're doing and they're like, oh my God, she's writing a ticket on the cop. Yeah. This has to be done. The people own the government. Okay. This is our society. It is our community. It is our life. It is our country. It is our right to do this. And we're going to, like John said, we're going to work out the technicalities, but I want you to be strengthened and feel that sense of confidence that you can take these things literally into your own hands. At the very least, you're going to have a record of this information. You're not going to walk away empty-handed. And imagine if you went into Costco and you saw every other person had one of these ticket books. Now we're talking. So anyway, keep going, John, because I'm curious. First you have filed a claim that's already pending because it got a court number. It got a case number. So now, and the other thing, friends, look at how powerful that phrase is. You can say, did you know there is a claim pending? Did you know there is a claim pending against this XYZ? And it's an actual fact because it has a case number. It's in the court system. Yeah. And that also can give you power and authority and information over those that are trying to bully and harass you. So walk us back a little bit. You have filed a claim that you're going to show us how to do. It is after that somebody's bullying you where you can write them up a summons on the spot. Do I have that correctly? Okay.
Yeah, right. That is a summons. Okay. It's a notice to appear for a show cause hearing. It's a traffic ticket.
And we're writing it.
You have a right to cite somebody and you have a pending civil action. And you can compel them under a court order to appear there. Okay, so
perfect.
I'm just showing you the procedure. It's already on the books. So you write the ticket, you write the notice to appear, and then you file a copy or your version of it with the same information with the court. Now, you schedule it with the court. Now, chances are, if it's a busy court, sometimes you won't get some 2 weeks out. That's okay. Get it a month out. No problem. Now, you have to notice this individual that you gave the notice to appear. So we can put this on the document, or you can tell them, you should probably put on the document. Any subsequent notices will be served upon your employer. That covers everybody. It covers the sheriff, the police, and the store. So we're going to put so if he doesn't tell you his name, that's his problem. Because if I have to serve him a subsequent notice and he doesn't tell me his name and it never gets to him and he misses the court date, I'm going to ask for contempt. That's what you have. You can do that because you're trying to enforce the law, and you have a right to do that. You don't have a right to prosecute the law in that sense because we gave that right to some people, the prosecutor's office. That's fine, but we have a right for an injunction. So you can just name, here's the way I do it, and you'll see my documents. I name the sheriffs, whatever county sheriff, okay? Then I can name deputies 1 through 10. And then I name John Doe's 1 through 10. This is a standard caption. A caption is the way you style the case, how you name the other party. So once this case is pending, you issue the notice to appear. There you go. So you can get it scheduled or not. If the person doesn't appear, you can then go to the court and get a summons issued. And here's how that works. You just print a summons off, and California is really easy to find. You just print a summons off. It's a civil summons, and you get the clerk to stamp it, and it costs you like a buck. If you get a fee waiver, it's free. So you get a summons issued. You just do this in the mail. It comes back in the mail. Then you serve it on the employer. Now this one, you need a process server to make it right. You bring a summons court ordered from the clerk of the court, and you serve it upon the individual. Maybe he's still there. Maybe he's there the next week or whatever, or it's his employer. Okay. That's it. And now you've got him. You can move forward to seek an injunction or temporary restraining order for someone violating the law that affects you. That's the
love it.
Bring in a criminal case, so to speak. Now, the remedy in there is you're asking for an injunction against the violation, but you're also asking that the matter be referred for investigation, for possibly it being prosecuted, or for disciplinary action to the employer of the individual. So for police officers, they could be subject to just disciplinary action. You don't need someone to put someone in jail. They could just get a reprimand. And I'd like to see that situation, because these are the idiots pushing it, and they're going to reprimand the guy who they just told to do this stuff. So we have a path here to follow. It's like a few pages of documents. It's not hard. Okay, so that's the criminal aspect of it. That's where people at the front door are interfering with your liberty. And I'll just say a couple things on that. Someone was asking me on a call the other day, isn't Costco a private membership club? In vernacular, common vernacular, it's a private club, yeah. But in the strict legal sense, it is not. And I'll tell you why. First of all, you can go shopping in the store without being a member. We all know that. But let's say you couldn't, which is not true, but let's say you couldn't. You could go walk in the store still and apply for membership. So it is open to the public in that sense. But because it is a membership, they don't deny membership to anyone who cannot pay the fee. I mean, you have to pay the fee. If you pay the fee and you fill out the application and you stand there for your photo, you're going to get a membership. So by that alone, the case law is, the courts have ruled for the last 100 years that activity excludes it from being a private membership association. It is a public accommodation.
And let's stop for a second there, because I'm going to create postcards and that on the front is going to say the definition of a public accommodation. And on the back, I want to talk about this just briefly, John. It's going to talk about direct threat. Now, this is a new phrase that I'm introducing that I haven't really talked about that much, but I want to do that before we go on so people understand. These law enforcement officers, and I've done rants about it before, and I value those upstanding officers that actually uphold the law and the Constitution and keep us safe. So this is not a general, I'm not throwing an overriding generalization on law enforcement, but here's what I want to say. Those law enforcement officers that are ignorant of the law are the problem, okay? And the law is this. A private entity, that's the legal definition in the federal government. And for people who just need a reminder, federal means anything that has to do with interaction in between states, all right? Or something that affects all of the states. And then each state has its own laws. Each state's laws may not be in conflict with the federal law, with the Constitution. So let me explain this. There are some federal laws that define public accommodation. So I don't care if your state of Texas doesn't have non-discrimination laws, you fall under these. Everyone is covered, just like we all get sunlight. Every single person is covered under this in the United States of America. The definition of a public accommodation is a private entity. Just remember those two words, a private entity, right? A private business. If it's not a private business, it's a government business. And the government also has to abide by these federal laws of non-discrimination. Any place like a shoe repair, a jewelry store, a chocolate shop, a restaurant, a hotel, a bank, a doctor's office, a dentist's office, all of these, unless they are organized differently, which John will talk about that another day, but these, the gym, any of these places that you can walk in, any private entity that is doing commerce where you can buy or sell something is called a place of public accommodation, all right? And these can be outdoor areas too, like a park, a zoo, and then they can be government buildings like the DMV, even the court is considered a place of public accommodation. You can go inside there, all right? And they may not prevent you from doing so without breaking the law. So let's be clear, every one of these places where you want to go and exchange money, with the exception, I'm going to give you a couple of exceptions. This is astonishing to me, but it's true. A church is not a place of public accommodation. A church can discriminate. They can tell you that you're wearing a turban, you're not able to come in, or only people in turbans can come in, and it's not against the law. Unless that church is running an event where they have opened up a classroom for gymnastics, practice or something, then they cannot discriminate. But as a church, they can do whatever they want. And the other place that I was going to say, which slips my mind right now, but number one is a church. They don't have to abide by this. And there is something called a private membership association, which has very strict rules on membership. Let's say that I want to, and I'm not going to, but let's say I want to go join the Shriners Club or something. You have to do all this stuff. That's not public accommodation. You have to apply for a membership. They interview you. They can kick people out. You just can't show up at one of their meetings unannounced and say, yeah, you got coffee and donuts here? That's not going to happen. But when you're talking about exchanging money, like you want to go buy something or you want to go enjoy yourself at a zoo or a movie theater or any of that, they don't have the right to prevent you, except there's one clause, and this is what they're using. This is going to be on the flip side of the card. You guys are going to have these cards, postcards. You can read them off. You can give them to people. The flip side is this definition, direct threat. Isn't that horrible? I hate that phrase. It sounds so sinister and menacing, like you're a walking time bomb that just, walking the face of the earth, you're going to kill people with your gaze. Don't let them bring you to that, because that's what they're trying to do. It's a type of medical dictatorship, medical terrorism, and we're not going to allow it. So direct threat means this, because they're going to say to you, well, we can't let you in because we're worried about the safety of our customers. And that's what Costco says. The safety of our associates and our customers, that's number one. But actually, number one is the law. They forgot that part, but John's going to show us they didn't forget it. This is going to get really fun. Here's what they say. You are a threat to others. Well, guess what? There's a legal definition for a direct threat. Yes, there is a federally described, defined legal definition for a direct threat. And you know what that means? They cannot just say off the top of their head that you're not wearing a mask, so therefore you're dangerous. That doesn't hold up in court, which is why I can't wait until these cases go to court. I want to go to court. I want to have a judge tell me that the federal constitution is wrong. That's what I want to wait for, because he can't. He'll be impeached. We'll go to a higher court. We'll get rid of the courts altogether at that point, okay? So I can't wait for this, friends, and we need your help to do it. This also can prevent these situations when we educate people. Here's the definition of a direct threat. Whoever deems you a direct threat must have the current medical assessment, which means you would have to have been evaluated by a licensed medical doctor who determined and has sworn under an oath, has sworn in an affidavit that you, the person that's watching this video, are carrying an infectious disease. Then that affidavit would have to be submitted to your health officer. And that health officer would have to go to a court. Remember the injunction John's talking about? A type of injunction that would order you to be isolated or quarantined to protect public health. So let me ask you this, dear, wonderful, healthy Americans. Do you currently have a court order of quarantine against you? Do you have that? Have you heard from a court, not your doctor's office, not a lab corp? Have you heard, do you have a court order telling you that you may not leave your house for 14 days, that you may not appear in public? Do you have a court order that you must isolate yourself at home? I don't. John, do you?
I don't.
Does your wife? Nope. So yeah, so therefore by the legal definition, John and his wife and me and my family and you watching this video likely are not a direct threat. And that's going to be on the flip side of this postcard. Because I've had it, my tolerance level has reached its max for people, for these egregious actions against wonderful people, or they don't even have to be wonderful, about any individual that has the right to seek medical care, and they are being told that they are a direct threat. I spoke to a woman today who told me the doctor wouldn't see her son because the son was coughing. Well, if you can't go to the doctor for medical care, where do you go to? Friends, this is medical terrorism. Wow. This is medical dictatorship. This is controlling your freedom and your right to freely associate, engage in commerce, and live your life because of this unlawful medical dictatorship. And I want everyone to have this card, which will say the definition of a public accommodation, the flip side definition of a direct threat. You hand that to the manager or your doctor's office. I recommend you do all of this in advance so it's not on the spot. They don't like to deal with people on the spot in front of the other customers, the other patients. They're going to hold their ground. You need to do this privately, in a phone call, separately, in a separate room. They think that they have to maintain this, you know, mask policy in front of others. So please, friends, it harms my soul when I hear these horrible stories of you being denied medical care because you tried to do it on the fly. I got an email from somebody saying his wife's in labor and they won't let him in. I'm like, well, why are you calling me now? This should have been done months ago. You knew she was pregnant. You got to figure all this out in advance. You don't wait until you go there and then try to muscle your way through. Please, that's what we're here doing for you, friends. So you are not a direct threat. Don't let them use that. That's what all of this nonsense is predicated on, that your human breath is fatal. It's not. And even if it was, there is no law that they're trying to create a law to prevent you from breathing further. And I know people are going to say, Peggy, let your guests talk. Further, and this is very important, I want everyone to be on the lookout for a new meme, a new phrase that's coming out. And I've noticed it in California. I've noticed it in Washington. And I want you to send me examples of it when you see it. These states and governors and health officers and are starting to say, we are guided by science and medicine. No. We are guided by law. Our society is run under law. Now, I know we can have many definitions of what that law is, and I understand people that are emailing me about common law, which is very important. But the point is, we do live in a civil society where there are laws that you may or may not agree with, but we don't run according to science. Our society doesn't make decisions, lawful decisions, regarding your rights and behavior are not predicated on science or medicine or any of that. Reject it 100%. I'm starting to see this over and over. That's more of the mind manipulation. Well, the science says, well, the doctor said. I don't care about the science and the doctor. I actually don't. That's why I've never spoken about the science of masks, John. You and I, that's not a, it's a supporting issue. It's not the main issue. The main issue is we have a right. Our number one right is the right to life. And in order to be alive, you need to breathe. There's two ways you can breathe, through your nose and your mouth. And therefore, there is no right, nor will there ever be any lawful edict, proclamation, order, or what have you, to prevent that from happening. And friends, if you are trying to educate others, I would use that as your kind of opening salvo. Is I would just ask them, do you know the two ways that we breathe, the two passages, the two airway passages? And whenever someone is unconscious or you pull them out of an accident, the number one thing you do is you check their airway. It's called ABC. It's airway, breathing, and circulation to make sure that the heart is still going. Anyone in EMT, any doctor, any lifeguard, any first responder knows the first thing you do with someone who has fallen, had an accident, you check to see that their airways are clear. You even go in if you can and you sweep out the back of their throat to make sure that they can breathe. If that's the case in emergency medicine, now we're being told to obstruct that. Now I am getting a little heated here, but this is, I want everyone to know you are not a direct threat unless a doctor has told you you are. And unless that doctor's office has received a report, or that dentist's office, or the shoe store, or your gymnastics practice, or your soccer club, or Costco, unless they have a document that prevents you, a restraining order against you, you have the right to enter the store. Now they're going to try to get a restraining order against you on trespassing. Yeah. We'll talk about that a little later. John, I'm going to turn it over to you.
Okay. Yeah, I appreciate your comments. What you're talking about there is, okay, there has to be a physician's affidavit. So when someone wants to claim that you're a direct threat, you can simply ask for a copy of the physician's affidavit. That's it. Can I see the physician's affidavit? Now, first of all, if it's a Costco employee, he's not supposed to have that. That's between you and your physician and the Department of Health. He does have to tell the Department of Health or a health officer about your condition if it's communicable or if you have been exposed to a toxic substance. There has to be a physician's affidavit. Then the Department of Health, that doctor has to give it to the health officer within 24 hours. And it has to be an affidavit under oath, okay? Then the Department of Health has to contact you. And if you refuse to cooperate and isolate yourself, they have every right to go to the court and get a temporary restraining order, okay? Then there's a court order that imposes, you can be confined by force, okay, by the police. That is an involuntary isolation or quarantine. If that condition is not there, then there's no direct threat. Now, where do we get this from? Did Peggy and I just make this stuff up? She could tell you, I don't know where she got it from. I can tell you where I got it from. There is a collection of laws and case law and research that's been floating around for a whole century that's telling judges how to do their job because they don't know everything. So there's different areas of law, and public health is one area of law, just like marriage is another, area, in traffic citations. So there are things called bench books in all the states. I don't know if I have one for California, but I've got one for like 15 different states, okay? They all say the same thing. All the case law, all the judges. So that's another subject, right?
But John, but what everybody can do, and this is what I like to do. I mean, it's interesting to me. You go on your county Department of Public Health, and you can even do your state. But this, I wanted to explain something. Your state Department of Public Health is really charged with collecting data. They don't really have any kind of implementation. They will set policy, but they are the department in your state that, has all these numbers of different things, like how many deaths there are in different, from different causes. Just, you can poke around. It's really interesting. You can go to all the statistics. And based on all of those statistics, then they will, issue policies and suggestions, and they do all sorts of things. They run information for lactating moms, and your State Department of Health is also involved in the food stamp programs and different kinds of things. But drill down to your county. Your county Department of Health has a jurisdiction, and as John said, doctors are required to report to your local county of health people that they see that come in with syphilis, with gonorrhea, with AIDS, with measles, with chickenpox, with anything that is deemed communicable or infectious. Now, that's a whole nother topic as to whether even, flu and all of that is contagious. And many people have, again, I'm not a medical doctor. I haven't spoken about that too much. But let's say tuberculosis. That's a bacteria. So bacteria is infectious. You know, you get a little bacteria, can get infected. We all know that. So tuberculosis, if a doctor gets a case of tuberculosis, he by law, as John said, is required to report that case mm-hmm. to the health department. Now there's that HIPAA thing again. All of that information must be kept confidential. The health officer can't just be telling his buddies, hey, here's somebody else I found. Gee, I didn't know that's my neighbor. They can't do that. That's what HIPAA law protects, is your medical information that's being transferred to different people. That's basically the law. So this health officer now is making notes, and it's more like of an aggregate of, oh my gosh, there's an outbreak of tuberculosis among this homeless population, that kind of thing, so that they can get in there, give them medicine, give them the medical care, look to see, oh my gosh, we've got all these people that have some kind of weird rash that is spreading. Well, they found out there's a toxic substance that's being leached into the water. That's what public health is for.
Right.
For the public, not for an individual behavior. Let's say that, you know, I live near the beach, and let's say that there is a chemical spill in the ocean. They can tell everybody legally, they can tell me that I can't go in the ocean for this period of time. That is public health. It doesn't mean that they can't tell me I can't go swimming in another pool because they think I've been swimming too often this week. No, they can't. They have no right over my individual health behavior whatsoever. Related in the public realm, right? And so that's what we're talking about. You can see that these are laws that are on the books, and as John and I like to do, we like to hold them to the law and use the law, which is there to protect us in many cases. So let's turn it back, John. We talked about the health officer. If he has not told you to quarantine, you are free to enter any store. You can say to them,
court order. You can ask for a copy of the court order or the physician's affidavit. Really, the court order. Where is the court order that has imposed a quarantine on me? Where's the court order?
It's perfect.
Show me the court order. There has to be a court order. You know, that also goes along with the 6 feet apart, because that's a form of isolation. That's unlawful restraint. It's a restraint of some way. And, you know, there's got to be a court order. You can create this case now. You can name the sheriff's office. You can also, here's one I would consider doing. You just need a case in court, okay, for this notice to appear business. You and your friend can do this. You can name your friend as the other party. And now you have a case. And there you go. You bring people into the case. That's what you're doing. You could do that all day long. You could take a few people and you could just go through the whole town and issue 100 citations in one day. So just think this through. It's a really nice tool if you guys want to do it. You can have some fun with this stuff. All right. So can we get into the civil case then? I mean, this is kind of what we talked about before. Let me just go into some of the steps. So when you have a case, here's what I ask everybody. When you guys ask me for help, I say, give me the facts. Tell me what happened. A lot of you already have done that. And some are very elaborate. It's great. The more facts, they're better. I take those facts, literally do not change them. I put them into an affidavit. Then I summarize them and I put them in the different counts. So based on what your experience was, there's going to be a complaint for harassment, but maybe not. There's going to be a complaint for injunction for violating state law. In every case, it's going to be like that. But sometimes there's harassment, sometimes there's not. Sometimes people don't realize that they were harassed. They don't understand what that is. Harassed would be something like you're being followed around the store. People are telling you have to do this thing. You know, you feel afraid for your safety, things like that. That's harassment. There are other items too. You also have a cause of action for violation of the Civil Rights Act in your particular state. That's pretty clear. Now that's a statutory claim. That's easy to make. All you have to do is have the supporting facts. And we start the case with an affidavit. So you have all these facts. We describe it in legal terms. Now you don't have to do that. It's already done, okay? So as long as you have the facts for your situation in order and you stay focused on those facts, and I try to avoid, you don't want to make legal conclusions in your statements. You just want to say what happened. Like you don't want to say, he was violating this law and, you know. No, it's just about what happened. I said this, he said that, then he did this, and then I did that, okay? So we have all that. We reduce it into a pleading. Now I have help. So when you send me something, what I'll usually do is I'll figure out what causes of action you have based on what I see. I'll put that together and I'll give it to the people that are helping me. And then we'll go back and forth and then we'll send it back to you for more information or editing, whatever. We go back and forth until it's ready. Now, when it's ready, there's a video I have, but we can also talk. It's useful to do this here. So let's say I'm going to do something in California and I'm ready. I've got my lawsuit, my affidavit, it's all ready. So then I would go on the internet. I don't have anything. I mean, I'm going to give you everything, but I'm just saying, if you didn't know already, you would go literally on the internet and you would search for this term, California Civil Summons Form. Pick your favorite search engine, California Civil Summons Form. It's got a form number. I think it's like CM010 or something like that. You don't even need to know that. Just California Civil Summons Form PDF. California is great for all these forms and procedures. As much as I hate all that, all those rules, they're very good with the forms. So you need the summons. You already have your complaint with the affidavit. And you need what's called a civil cover sheet. All that is a checkbox form that you're helping the clerk collect statistical data about the type of case you're filing. So it would literally take you about 30 seconds to check it two boxes or so, put your name and the name of the other people, put that on there, and then that goes with the summons. So you got the civil cover sheet, the summons, and the complaint. Now, the complaint does include exhibits. So sometimes you might have four pages of an exhibit. Sometimes you might have something, you know, elaborate. You might have the written communications. You may have written communications with the other party, right? So let's say it was texting or email. You'll want to print those out and put them on paper, and that becomes Exhibit A. That's usually Exhibit A, okay? So the complaint includes exhibits. So when I say complaint, I'm talking about that too. So you have these three things. The only other thing that's optional, and again, you can find this on the internet. You would look for this term, California Superior Court Fee Waiver Affidavit. If you don't like paying high fees, which are quite high in California, okay, to file a case. It's not just filing the case though. When you ask for other things from the court throughout the case, there's large fees. Like if I want to try to win the case on a motion for summary judgment, for example, it's like $300 or $400. If someone files a motion that I need to respond to, the court will charge me to respond. And if I don't respond, I'm going to lose the case. It's really bad. So you may want to consider a fee waiver affidavit. It's also called an affidavit of indigency. Indigency. Okay. That just means you can't afford the fee. Now for me, I'm set up financially to where I'm always poor. I look poor on paper. I look like a homeless guy. So for me, I can always have fees waived. I don't know what your situation is. If you need help with that, let me know. I don't want to lie on those forms. Always tell the truth. If you don't like disclosing your financial information, that's up to you. Keep in mind that that affidavit only goes, the original one that you file, only goes to the clerk and one judge. And the judge is not the one that's going to hear your case. No one else gets to see that, just so you know, if you care. All right, so that's the summary of it. Now, I mentioned before, you want to keep your membership at Costco because you have an agreement. It's a written agreement, and you want to hold them to it. You want to give yourself a cause of action known as breach of contract. Okay, that's your membership agreement. Now, there may be some provisions in there about suing them. I don't know what those are. I have to go look. But let me just tell you what your contract is with Costco. I'm just going to tell you what it is off the top of my head. Costco gets great stuff, products, food, and whatever at a discount because it has a set number of members, and the seller to Costco knows that because it has a set number of members, it's going to make a profit, right? That's the special thing about the membership clubs. And then the other side of the deal is you can come in there and behave yourself and go shop and pay for the groceries and leave. That's your contract. Your contract does not include, unsafe practices or medical exams or, you know, all those things. You're not required to babysit for somebody. It's just, you know, so that's the simple version. So if we bring that in as a cause of action along with an injunction, I think if enough people do that, Costco is going to have to fix things.
That's fantastic, John. Do you want to jump into some of the documents and we'll show them? Okay. Yeah. That sounds great.
Okay, I'm going to bring you over to, this is the how you get started. Here's what you send them, a letter, okay? So I'm going to share this. I call it a final notice to Costco, right? Final notice. So I'm going to scroll back up. You guys can see this, right? So you see, you would put your name up here, all right? my same old method. I always like to bring the AG's office in, and I just pick Sacramento. Don't get stressed over what location. I don't know what it is about California, maybe because it's such a big state. You got like 8 addresses for the AG's office. Pick one. Pick the closest one to you. It doesn't matter. If you really want to know where it is, use this. They're all listed at this website, okay? Get the address that's closest to you for the AG's office here. Then delete this line. You don't need a URL in your letter, okay? Put the date. That is actually important. I found this. Correct me if I'm wrong. I think this is correct. This guy here is the top attorney for the company. Here's your CEO, okay? I think I'm right on those. These are their addresses. They have to be the same address, okay? And I like to make this message right out at the beginning. You guys can do what you want, but your policies can't violate the law. Now, this is the best part, Peggy. I love this part. Guess what the code of ethics for Costco says? Line number one, obey the law. That's Costco's own code of ethics.
I just love that. This is what's so fun in the case, you guys.
How could you not lose? I mean, Judge, do I have a right to rely upon a written policy of a business of which I'm a member, a paying member? Do I have a right to rely upon a written policy? Not to mention, do I have a right to rely upon the law? And then it goes on to say that almost the next line is the law is irrefutable. Thank you very much, Costco. So this is in the complaint. I mean, if you guys want to go over it, I can go over it, but that's in the complaint. And we're going to use this to get what's called a summary judgment without going to trial. Now, some people I do this for, and they call me up and they go, I really believe this sounds good and all, but you're demanding a jury trial and I'm not sure I can do that. And I say, look, I don't want a jury trial either. You don't want a jury trial. I don't want a jury trial. They definitely don't want a jury trial. So that's why I ask for a jury trial. Because when you ask for a jury trial, that just translates into huge costs of litigation. I'm not just trying to cost them money, but that's how they look at it. So I'm saying, I want a jury trial. And I really don't. What I really want is a summary judgment and then to go on with my life. Okay. But by saying you want a jury trial, that means you're willing and able and you believe you're confident to go all the way. You want to tell them that. Because that probably might make you. So I just put a list here of the different things I think that are being violated just off the top of my head when I put this list. I put this in the letter specifically. I want them to see this first. Because, you know, the letter's what, 3 pages, I think? Maybe they're going to be like, I'm not going to read any more letter. I want them to read the letter, right? These are important matters. These cost them money, okay? All these things are the issues here. And I go into the detail, making arguments. And you've seen these before in my letters, okay? I mean, we can read them if you want, but the last thing I tell them is this. Advise that you are outnumbered, okay? You're one, we're many, all right? You got money to spend, but what about your public perception to your investors, your bondholders, right? How's that going to play out? Are you going to tell them, oh, everything's okay, and you're getting sued by 15 people a week? Oh, it's all fine. Stock's going to be fine. Don't worry about that. Buy more stock. No, they're going to start short selling your stock. If you guys don't know what that means, it just means they're going to start betting against your stock value. And as people start betting against your stock value, it drives the price down. So what does that happen to all the people that own big chunks of Costco? I'm sorry to say, but a lot of these guys only do something if there's money, if money's involved. So, you know, that's why I put that at the end. Okay. That's just my take on it. You guys can rewrite this however you want. I mean, there's probably too much here, but this sets up the case because when I bring in the counts and I have an affidavit supporting the facts and I sue for 3 or 4 counts, and these I've already put them on notice and they didn't respond or didn't take any action. Well, here you go. I told you guys, now here I am. All right. That's your civil case there. If you want to see the complaint, I can show you that too.
Yeah. Let's take a look at that. This is fantastic. I love, they are violating their own code of ethics, as we saw with Sprouts, which, by the way, Sprouts took that off of their website. I mean, it's off the internet. It's been scrubbed from the internet, but
it on the internet now because we just.
That's right. Yeah, it's awesome.
Everybody has it, thanks to. You know, so, yeah, I mean, I like to make analogies. But anyways, here's another aspect, and you're going to see this when I show you the complaint. For some reason, I didn't realize this until I did the research, but grocers, retailers have this thing about bribery, and they have strict policies on bribes. I think maybe there's an industry thing where people bribe the store to get shelf space, I guess. I don't know. So it's very strict. So I imagine that these retailers are getting money from the emergency funds, and that's why I set it in here. So I'm going to accuse them of taking bribery money. That's going to be a big deal for them, because imagine if there's an investigation or even claims by 50 people in the public in lawsuits, what does that do to all the investors? They're like, oh, well, I'm not touching this, right? The funds are under the emergency utilization or the emergency use authorization plans where they're getting emergency funds. Also, emergency funds are being paid out through insurance claims through what's called pandemic insurance that was sold at least since a few years ago by the World Bank Group. So they may be getting a piece of that as well, not to mention the FEMA and CARES Act funds. So let me switch over.
Yeah, that's why I call Costco a government store, because they basically are funded in so many ways by the government, which I normally would have said it's our tax dollars, but now that they make the money out of thin air, it's a monopoly.
Yeah, they
money.
Could be. I mean, they could almost be a government agency. So, yeah. Okay. So I'm not sure, Peggy, you can check this out. I mean, I kind of did this overnight, but I'm just going to point to something real quick here. Oh, wait a minute. I want to go back to, no, I don't want to go to that one. I'm going to go to the other one. Let me see if I can. Yeah, here it is. It's over here. Let me close this out so I don't do that again. I have a couple of things opened over here. All right. Close that out. Close that out. All right. This might be it. Okay. You can see there's lots of gaps in here because we start that way. Whenever you guys want help, we start with a form, and then we go through and say, now this is in here for a false arrest. Not everybody's going to be using that. Most people will not be using this count, but some of the facts are necessary in here. Okay. Like for example, when you start a case, this is going to be a civil complaint. A false arrest is a tort. And there may be a statute for it, but it doesn't matter. You can state a claim for a tort that's not in a statute. It's called a common law tort, okay? And the courts will hear it if you express it properly. So you just tell them who's suing who, why the court has jurisdiction. All states have a trial court. It's a court of record that can issue what are called special writs, and that's what you're asking for. An injunction is a special writ. And then here's my story, right? So that's why I ask you guys for the story. And you have your statements of fact. Here's what happened. It always starts on this, on the date of such and such. I talked to this guy. I was at this location. Okay. That's your story. Now, this would not actually go here because I'm citing its code of ethics here. Probably not. It would not go here. But this is, again, we're just starting this. We're going to modify it. And I just go ahead and quote more into their policies. And then this part is what are called allegations. The allegations are the very strict things that have to be said. If you eliminate one or miss one, here's what happens. The other side in California, for example, is going to file a demurrer. They're going to file a demurrer anyways. A demurrer says, yeah, we admit everything, but still you don't have the right to sue us. That sounds kind of weird to most people. Like, why would they say that? Well, like, here's an example. Let's say you owe debt to a company and the company waits until it's too late to sue you, meaning that the statute of limitations on collecting on that debt is 5 years, let's say. And let's say the company waits 7 years and files a case, and they'll get a case number and they'll sue you. They'll get the summons issued, and you'll have to answer the complaint. So you answer the complaint and you file a motion to dismiss, or you file a demurrer if you're in California, and you say, yeah, you know, that was a debt I owed these guys a long time ago, but sorry, you can't sue me now because the statute precludes you from suing me beyond 5 years. and the judge would grant the motion. He would say, the defendant does not have to pay, go home to the plaintiff. Okay, that's an example of admitting, you know, yeah, I owe it, but you still don't have the right to sue me. That's what they would do, okay? So this is very helpful. You want them to test the pleading to make sure it's correct, because you don't want a jurisdictional defect and you win, and then 10 years down the road, they're gonna bring it back and say, you know, the court never had jurisdiction in the first place, and now you gotta undo everything, which is not likely, but you want your pleading to be done correctly. So if you file the pleading and you leave something out that's material, that's important, then their demur or their motion to dismiss will test it. And that tells you, it gives you instruction on how to fix this. Okay, it tells you what to do. I did a case recently. It was a false imprisonment case. That one's still pending. They filed a motion to dismiss. Now I put an allegation in there that I knew I probably shouldn't put, and I could probably get away with it. And if I take it to the appeals court, I'll probably still win. But just to make it perfect, I use the attorney's argument to fix my pleading. And then I ask for permission to refile it. And the judge always gives it to you, by the way. So I use the first opposition to correct my pleading and make it good, better, perfect. Then I refile it. And then I set up another hearing to talk about it, to see if we can move forward. And your goal here is to move forward. This is written so that you want it written so that it overcomes the demur or the motion to dismiss. If you can do that, chances are they're going to offer you something. They're going to say, okay. We can't win on this, preliminary motion. We're going to have to go through pretrial. Look, what's it going to take to make this go away? You've heard this before, right, in the movies? That's literally what happens. And I've had many, many cases like that. It's funny. I've had cases where, many, many cases where a person owes tens of thousands of dollars to creditors, and they sue him, and rightfully so. And we bring a new case in the federal court. And I'm not saying federal court is your answer. I'm just saying, as an example, this is what we did. Bring a new case in the federal court and sue for a violation that was incurred in the process of collecting the debt that was rightfully owed. And the attorney would contact us and say, look, what's it going to take to make this go away? And we say two things. You send us the penalty amount that we want, and you withdraw the complaint forever. And they always agree, because they don't want to deal with it. So I'm not saying this is a cakewalk, but it can be, and you're going to get help. You're not alone. There is a set of rules. It's not so rigid that you can't succeed. Okay, you can really screw up. I've seen people amend pleadings like 5 or 6 times. So we do that. We come through this. So we come through the different causes of action. Let's look at this one. This one is against false imprisonment. So you might be faced with a situation where you're going to be blocked physically from going into a building. I wouldn't say confront somebody. Let them block you and then document it and leave, or give them the citation and leave. The citation is, you know, optional. For some of you will want to do that, some will not. Then you have, you know, your facts in that case, and there's certain allegations I have to make for false imprisonment. Okay, there's some things I have to say in there. And then I've got one here for, this is the one that everyone's going to have. I put it as count 3. I don't know why. I guess I'm usually going to delete the first 2 counts, okay, for most people. But this one is for an injunction against illegal conduct. I don't have to say illegal conduct. I just did this for demonstration purposes. It's an injunction generally, and I'm going to complain that the defendant is violating the law, violating my rights, and no, I don't have a private right of action on those legal violations, but I do have a right of action when it concerns myself. So I can then ask for an injunction. Like for example, I can ask for an injunction because the people at the front door told me that, or the business told me that I have to undertake a medical intervention as a condition for shopping there, for example, which is our common case here. If I can show the judge that it's not required by law because I have the right to informed consent, they're not the right people, they're not a physician, all these things, right? There's no physician's affidavit, etc. I'm not subject to quarantine. We go through all these things in this injunction. Everybody's probably going to get this. I like to argue, like in California, I like to argue the OSHAs, you know, that it's unsafe, unhealthy to wear a mask all day. Everything you want to show the judge is going to convince them that, hey, these guys are kind of not doing the right thing. Practicing medicine without a license. You can't impose a medical intervention, even if you're a physician. So what is it for someone who's not a physician? You know, then there's a, you know, California code for that. In fact, you don't even need to cite the code because everybody understands. If you're out open to the public and you're doing medical interventions for people, medical care, there has to be a license because you're affecting the public. That's what a license is for. Okay, you have to, the license ties you to providing or being required to provide a remedy for anyone you might injure. So it's a very important thing. This is actually helping us. So that's an important factor. So you want to identify what they're doing. Then we have this issue with the, you know, the Bill of Rights. Now we don't need that again. Like I was saying, you have a property right to informed consent. There has to be the medical efficacy, medical, you know, necessity for a medical intervention. All these come into play. But again, we're just listing all the things that the defendant is doing incorrectly or in violation of the law and in violation of its own policies. Okay. Obey the law. So let me see here. What else do we have? We got, there's a complaint for harassment. I think that would be the second most popular one because you might feel harassed. That's up to you to decide. If your statement as to the case tells me that the facts are there, I would add that in there and suggest that you make that claim. Here's another thing to consider. If you make a two count complaint and you know that the second count may not be a good count to make, make it, because it's like a negotiation. Because a lot of times the other side, if you push them into a corner where you get past the demur or the motion to dismiss and they say, let's work this out. And you say, okay. And you know what you want. So you ask for the thing you want. And then you also ask for the thing you don't want, like that you don't care about. And the other party will say, yeah, well, okay, I might give that to you. But what about this other thing? You say, I'll tell you what, I'm a nice guy. I'm going to let you go on this complaint for harassment. All I really want is this thing, you see? So it gives you some way to negotiate, right? If you can plausibly state a case. Then if I scroll down a little bit more, here's a case for negligence. Now I'm talking to somebody. This is a case where I had to write this originally a month ago because this guy was at a gym and trying to be a good guy. He knew he didn't have to wear a mask, but he's like, okay, I'll do what you tell me. And he's doing some work on what's called the heavy bag. He's over there exercising with a mask on. Guess what? He passed out. He lost consciousness. He said he estimates he lost consciousness for at least a few minutes. And when he regained consciousness, nobody cared. It's like nobody came over to look at him or help him or anything. So there was people there. And then he said he, after that experience, he just left. Like, come on, you're just going to leave and go to, he said he went to another gym. I'm not trying to say to you guys, let's sue him. We have to sue him. That's not always the remedy, but don't give up a case because you're going to leave it for someone else to clean up.
Hey, John, let me piggyback on what you just said, because you're exactly right. I want everybody who's watching to think about the reality of this, all right? We are in a type of a war, a battle, and you're on the front lines. And by you taking action, yes, it is kind of like a sacrifice. You're a casualty. There are going to be casualties. But the fact is, you're going to be opening the door to allow those coming after you to have a smoother, you know, smoother sailing. So yeah, the gyms are a big issue that we hear a lot of complaints about. And yeah, there is like, just leave, you know, start your own gym. I often will say that, just work out at home, don't give them your money. And that is one option. But really, if we're seeking the remedy for our society, for our community, it is educating these people on the wrongdoing that they're doing. And then when they don't care, when they're like, oh, I don't care, you know, tell it, it's like, well, now you're going to care because we are going to hold you to the law. So I see it as a social, you know, you, I never use that expression, you know, for the common good, but you actually are going to help the people coming after you by doing this and helping those people actually abide by the law. And sometimes they're not going to pay attention until they get these summons and they have to go to court and, yeah, or maybe avoid the court, but at least deal with these charges. So
I'm going to show you something here. Let me go back to this just to reinforce what you just said. When you're asking for an injunction, let's see here. No, let me go back up.
So the injunction can apply to more people, right? Not just you.
Yeah, you have
to. Not that the gym's not going to hurt you.
Yeah, yeah. Look at this. You have to tell the court why the public interest would be served.
That's it.
That's and that's exactly what we're doing this for. So
yeah,
it's so important that you actually have to say that. If you don't say that, he won't hear the case and he won't tell you. He or she, the judge, will not tell you. You'll have to figure it out. So yeah, Peggy's right. The last one, that's what I say. Okay, here's the last one that I can think of now. Hopefully you guys don't have a negligence case. Hopefully you're healthy and you didn't have any adverse consequences. But you do want to sue for breach of contract. You have a right to rely upon the contract. That's what you're paying for. So you just say it. And here you, I'm waiting for someone to give me a story. I'll put it right here. Okay. In fact, I could probably write the story. It's going to be the same for everybody. And then I just start like this. Okay. I haven't written that one up yet, but anyways, that's the idea. And you file it like I was saying, and you get your case number and you serve it on them. And you file it in the county where the incident took place, where the business is located. In this case, we're talking about Costco. All right.
That's just awesome. That is so great. So all of these actions we can do on our own. Friends, I'm going to be embedding those documents at thehealthyamerican.org under the tab that says Costco. Now, we do want to get hundreds of people filing these court cases. And I want to talk just for a moment, John, about the difference between an individual action and a class action. Mm-hmm. So if you would talk a little bit about that, because I get a lot of people saying, let's do a class action against ABC. And there are different approaches. So tell me about that, and then we can clear that up for people.
A class action, if there is a class action, if there is, you're already in the class. It's not special. The other issue with it, okay, the other issue is that it's one case, and it's just one case. So there is a strategy to cost of litigation. I hate to say, but it's just, there is a strategy. If you have 100 people suing, it says something. It's different. Now, to make a class, you need at least, I believe it's 2 or 3 people. It depends on your rules of civil procedure, okay? In order to get a class, it doesn't mean that everybody signs a petition. What you have to do is you have to state a cause of action for the class. You have to identify the class. Then you have to apply for class certification in the appeals court. Mm-hmm. It's a process. It's not hard. You could do it.
Yeah.
But I think you're wasting your time. I think it's way easier to just sue them. And then check this out. If you dislike class actions, I don't know why you would. Attorneys like them because they make a lot of money for attorneys. I've been a recipient of a beneficiary of a class action before. And I think the claim was like $40 million that they got. And I got a check for $5.20.
Yeah, exactly.
Sure out there got that. Yeah.
Yeah. So you get your, yeah.
It's for attorneys. Okay. Now it does shift public policy. So here's what you do. If enough people file cases like this, they will be similar enough. Here's what these guys might do. And this goes to show you, if the opposing side, who's always the defendant, the Costco, let's say, for example, Costco may apply for class certification itself and put all those cases into one case. Now, if your opponent does that, it has to tell you one thing. It's to his advantage and not yours. I believe it's to your disadvantage to try to join a class. You need to do this yourself, and you are the attorney who can do this because you're watching this video right now, okay? You have a driver's license. How'd you get that? If you're telling me that you can't use a court system that was designed for you to use and you're out driving a car, I'm scared. I'm not going to go out on the roads, okay? So don't tell me you can't do it. It's just like going to college and your first experience with your first assignment with a real essay you had to write or a real research paper. This is it. We're all adults, and it's a facility that we created for our own benefit, and we should be using it. If not, we should be ashamed of ourselves. Use the courts.
This is awesome, John. If this is the most important aspect, I think, of this video, is if people have that bigger picture, you can do this. We created the courts for ourselves to uphold our rights, to have an impartial referee help handle the dispute, right? So this side says, hey, you don't have a right to come here, even though we have a contract that says you can. And you're like, hey, I want you to stick to your contract. Well, what people have been doing, rightly so, because it's our human nature to just work it out on our own, In fact, the court wants us to work it out on our own. They will ask, did you try to work this out on your own? What did you do? I don't want you to waste our time here. What did you do already? So it's great. It's great that you went to Costco. It's great that you served a notice of discrimination. It's great that you're bringing the cards to explain to them your civil rights. All of that is important. Sometimes it actually works. But don't be afraid to say, hey, I've got a dispute. We need the court, which we created, we the people, to resolve these disputes. That's all you're doing. These judges work for you. Think of yourself as the owner of this conglomeration, and these are your employees. You never, when we talk about public servants, you never need to worry that you're bothering your city council or your mayor or the board of supervisors. I wouldn't bother with the governor, but you know, the board of any of these local agents and agencies, they work for you. You are their boss. Anyone that has a business, you wouldn't just let your employees come in and leave when they want to. And if you didn't like the quality of their work, you wouldn't just let it go. You would talk to them about it. That's the position. That's the frame of mind that I want you to have. And I love what John said. If you have a driver's license, you have already negotiated, you know, the public arena of documents and filing and getting information and following through on these procedures. Now, I know people are, as I've said, one of the most common questions I get is, do you have an attorney? And my common answer is, why do you want one? And you don't need one. And John has just showed you all of the things that you can do. Now, you're going to need to participate in this. That's part of the taking action, right? We've got connection, which is what we're doing. We're connecting people. The education, we just spent nearly 90 minutes on this step by step. I recommend that you watch it again. I always have my notebook when I'm with John, and I take my notes, and you can pause and listen, and then please be patient. We are filming this on Friday. I probably will have these documents on Monday or Tuesday. So be patient. I will send everybody an email. Make sure you're on thehealthyamerican.org. You can do this. It's important that you know how. This is a skill that you are going to develop. You're going to learn how to research, how to get those cover letters in your state. You're going to read these claims to become familiar with the language, with the layout, with the process. That is what attorneys do have, is they have a knowledge of the court proceedings and the procedures and all of that. But that's, like John said, we probably aren't even going to get in front of a judge. You're asking the judge to tell these people that are wronging you to knock it off. That's what an injunction is. To reiterate, you don't need a class action. I know it sounds like a fancy word. It sounds like you can just hitch a ride on somebody else's lawsuit. Well, yeah, I've gotten my class action payments of, same thing, 10 cents, $2. And it feels as though you can sit back and let someone else take the reins. That's not what we're about, friends. It hasn't worked very well, has it? That's why we're in the situation we are right now. If we had been doing what John's been doing for 20, 30 years of holding people to the law, using the law in a way that it is designed to protect us from these harms, to call people on it when they are acting outside of the law, these complaints and causes of action are just awesome. I think most healthy Americans already are reciting, you know, you're not a medical doctor, you're not a law enforcement officer, you are violating my civil rights. And then we end up with people going, so I don't care, you still can't come in. Well, now we're doing the legal action. That's and right. That's what it's going to get their attention. And further, if they ignore this, then comes the contempt of court, then comes penalties against the companies. And the other thing that John mentioned, which is where it all comes down to, is money. The investors, the stockholders, the insurance companies don't want to pay out these claims. And they think that we're ignorant. Okay. The government and these big corporations think that you're ignorant. And the fact is, they are the ignorant ones. They are ignorant. I only give them three choices, John. They're either ignorant, they're incompetent, or they are intentionally trying to deceive you. And I'll leave that up to the viewers to choose, vote for which one they think it is with these corporations. And I want to summarize, don't cancel your Costco membership. If you do, you no longer have standing. You can't have a good suit if you're already, you already broke the contract yourself, or you already ended the contract yourself, and then you go to court. That's not going to hold up. Asking for the injunction and then saying this is going to serve the public interest, it works like a class action lawsuit. What does that mean? It means one remedy or one ruling of the court applies to everybody else that that might affect. So I'm working with a lady regarding, maybe you are too, John, regarding Smart and Final. And this is a store that's everywhere. We can also, maybe in a future video, talk about using federal courts for stores that are in different states. Depending on where you live, like California, you know, it might be in certain areas that your federal your U.S. attorney, your U.S. Court is going to be a better venue. But the fact is, this woman is going to seek an injunction against Smart and Final to prevent them from harassing her from entering this business. They don't even have a membership. So she has the right to go in there and shop, you know, unless she is carrying a machete and waving it at people. Now she's a direct threat. You don't need a doctor's note, because that has nothing to do with the disease. If you have somebody walking in shouting obscenities and ready to fist fight, that's a direct threat. You're seeing it directly. It's imminent. But a normal person walking in, even if they don't want to buy anything, they have the right to walk into that store. So when she gets the court order saying, you're right, Smart and Final is wrong, you have the right to shop there. And by the way, anyone else that may be under threat of harassment also has the right to shop there. It's basically class action. In my understanding, John, is that correct? That will serve?
What happens is, if you get a judgment like I'm talking about, if one person does get a judgment, that will come from the trial court. Let's just say you get from the trial court. That is not binding on anybody else. However, it could influence the decision-making of all their, just one judgment would do it. So it doesn't need to be binding, but if you have to appeal it and then the appeals court does whatever it does, and now you have a ruling from the appeals court, which is called a holding, that is binding on all the other courts in this whole state and everybody who's in the same conduct, every retailer. It would affect every retailer directly. So some of you may end up with an appeals court holding, okay? But just the fact that you may win in trial court should be enough. It might be enough.
Yeah.
The other thing is, you can file a federal lawsuit in your state court. You don't need to file in the U.S. District Court. If you have a federal cause of action, probably 99% of the things we're doing, yeah, they involve federal law, but we can do this all in the state court. The state court has concurrent jurisdiction. But here's what's interesting. If you file a Fed, sometimes I'll file a Fed case in the state court because, for example, my filing fee is $50. I just do this for a client, right? So I'm saying, look, let's just file the federal case in your small claims court. And what will happen is the attorney, because they're so smart, you know, and they want to do the right thing, they remove the case to the U.S. District Court, which is where it's supposed to go. And they have to pay the balance of the fee, which is $350.
That's that perfect.
It gives my client a lot better break. And I let the attorney do all the work, and it costs them more money, not my client. So.
I just love it. You see,
there's a whole strategy there.
And this is all legal. And I remember you told me that it's good if it goes to appeals, because again, for the reasons you said, that is binding on all the other courts. So don't lose heart. Don't lose heart, friends. And the other thing I would recommend is, I really would like you to roll up your sleeves and take this on. You have the confidence, you have the ability. I want to encourage you to do that. And it's great. John and I both are inundated with requests. He's so generous. He is having people help him. And I know, John, you're working with a couple of Healthy Americans that are helping you with these cases. That's awesome. So friends, if you can do most of the footwork, I would just ask you that, to not, after this video, just email me and go, can you help me with a case against, Trader Joe's? No. You start it. You do all this stuff that we showed you. If you need the little bit of fine tuning to have somebody look it over, but imagine how little action we would be able to take if we had to spend all of our waking hours doing all of these court. I'm not a lawyer. He's not a lawyer. You don't need a lawyer. All right. You're going to be the lawyer. And you have the right to do this. And we want to empower you to do any future cases that might come up, anything that has to do with, you know, taking your car to get fixed or going to the dentist or what have you. You can start doing all that groundwork. And that's what I would ask, because our goal, John and I, want to have hundreds of these suits. I mean, maybe even thousands of these filed. And at the very least, every court clerk is going to see this. They're going to go, wow, man, I can't believe all these Costco suits I'm seeing. The judges are going to see it. Anybody else that's involved in this, if you go do an affidavit, that's, you're going to have notarized. You don't, I'm not saying you have to do that, but anyone that you're impacting along the way is going to go, wow, did you hear, man? There's a lot of action going on. This is where it goes in the public square. We want Costco to be aware of that. We want there to be, I mean, I hope this video goes viral. They need to know that we want to shop there. That should be a good thing, right? I know people will say, and I've said it as well in the heat of frustration, just boycott these stores. Well, then where are we going to go shopping? It sounds great. John also mentioned petitions don't get things done, friends. I'm not talking, like, there's the recall, the governor petition. That's different. That actually is a legal document. Yeah. I'm talking about doing a petition on change.org. It does nothing, actually, in terms of, or let me say, it does very little. And I would recommend, and I applaud you for your enthusiasm to want to do something, but rather than spend your time trying to write a petition and get a petition signed and filing just a public, here's a bunch of us that feel this way. Dig into the law, start to take these actions that you can do, and these actually are going to have the impact that you are seeking through the petitions. I do applaud you, everyone, for your enthusiasm to want to get that done. It's not something that I recommend as a first cause of action, just like I don't recommend protesting outside of stores. There may be a time for that, and it's good for the public square to see that people are enthusiastic about a certain thing, but let's spend our limited time, energy, resources, money, and our emotional wherewithal towards something that actually is going to have the result we want. That's my view on it, John. Any closing words? Where can people go to see your other videos? There's great stuff he's putting up, friends. I want you all to educate yourself.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I separate it from my core work. So Privacy Fight, as one word, is my core work. So I deal with, you know, risk management, things like that. But I separated out to a different channel called John Singleton. And the problem with that is it's a common name, I guess. So you may have to put another phrase in there, like mask wearing or something. But once you find it, it's just a big green circle with the J in there. Just, you know, join it, subscribe. There's that. And then, you know, on Peggy's site, I'm gonna give her all the documents and a link to some of those videos. There's a video on, you know, how to, like I just described, how to file the suit. And if you want to email me, just singletonpress@protonmail.com. And what really helps is if you tell me, like, if you have a situation and you tell me the facts, and lots of times, if I have enough on that email, I will right then do the documents and I will send it back to you and I'll go on to the next thing. So I'm happy to do that.
That is just perfect, John. You are so generous. I'm so glad that we met. For those who don't know, John J. Singleton contacted me in the very, very beginning. And John, you were emailing me different, documents and causes of action and this kind of stuff. And it was so helpful. And this was so new to me that I started making a file of all of your stuff. And then it's like, oh my gosh, we've got to connect. And then we did our first video a couple of months ago, which was probably one of the top viewed videos. And that was all about Sprouts. And friends, if you haven't seen that, it still lives on my website. And I want to tell everybody now also this very important information. I'm going to be moving to a private website for my videos. And the reason why, and I'm sure everybody knows this, there is a very strong push to, it's called deplatform, which basically means to take your videos off of YouTube. So while I still have my channel, there's no videos and there's no subscribers and there's no information. And so the way that I'm going to be doing this is I'm still going to maintain my YouTube channel, and I'll talk about things more in an introductory manner and, you know, give things that aren't going to trigger the algorithm of YouTube. So I'll still be there. And then all of the uncensored information like probably this video, John, it's actually all legal. So we haven't done anything that's too outrageous, but certain things are being triggered by YouTube. And I got counsel from somebody saying, you know, this is a good idea also, John, in your tags, start tagging yourself with things like cooking show and travel agent and gardening tips. And that way, as YouTube is crawling, even if it sees like, oh my gosh, lawsuit or mask or injunction or whatever, because they actually are doing an algorithm on our speech. It's not just the description. Yeah. Just like, that's why there are subtitles. They can scroll through and get keyword alerts. So you have to put in a, like we should say right now, oh, for our next cooking show, we're going to be here for the gardening channel. We should actually use those words in our speech. Yeah. And then put them in the tags as well. And that should make your information a little more bulletproof. So I want to let everybody know the most important thing you can do is to get on thehealthyamerican.org, sign up for the newsletter. I've even had my newsletter shut off my service, but at least I have your email. And then when I have your email, that is my way of contacting you, you know, through smoke signals, or, you know, I'm going to be using telegraph service or something, but I will have your information and I can use that on a different format or platform. I cannot find you on Facebook if they pull my channels, pull my page, and they've done that a few times already. I can't find you on YouTube if they can't be in contact with you there if they pull the page. You've got John's email. You've got mine, Peggy@thehealthyamerican.org. Give us yours, because we have got to create these freedom communities, these patriot networks, where we're going to help each other. We're going to get through this. You know, John, he's an optimist like I am. It's a strange thing, but we're actually finding this very satisfying to bring these people to their you know, rightful judgment. It's a hassle. It's no fun to have to feel that we go into these hostile environments, but we are willing to take it, you know, where it needs to go to put this to an end. So I've got to sign off, John. I've got another appointment here, but if you would hang on with me just one moment, we're going to stop streaming here. Thank you, everybody. You know where to find us. Always thehealthyamerican.org. I'll have links to all this stuff, and then go take some action. All hands on deck, full steam ahead, everybody. Brighter days ahead.